For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
So, good evening, everyone. Welcome. Tonight, we're going to have a Sangha talk. Titus O'Brien will talk, and we'll have some discussion. And maybe I'll mention that Titus teaches at the Art Institute and has been leading a Wednesday afternoon. Is it?
It was Wednesday last term. I think we might change the day, but
yeah. So he's been leading a little sitting group, sort of in association with Ancient Dragon at the Art Institute. So anyway, Titus, welcome, and thank you for offering so much.
Thank you. So I've got something to hand out here. Hold on to one. I think there should be enough to... Yeah. So I'm going to give a somewhat rambling discussion about sort of the body and Zazen practice in our Soto way, our Dogen Zen way. By way of a little background, I've been practicing Zen, and first encountered this thing we call Zen about 20 years ago when I was in college, and an artist and composer by the name of John Cage visited the school where I was attending. I know we have some John Cage fans in the house. So it's safe to say that John Cage blew my mind, literally just blew my mind. And he talked about Zen. I didn't really... It was at a time in our culture where I think it was a little bit easier maybe to have never even heard the term, seemingly. I don't remember being aware of it at the time. But he talked about Zen, and I wanted whatever he was taking. So I looked into that. He seemed like the first happy person I'd ever met. It was that striking. And so he talked about Zen, and he also talked about the I Ching and, you know, anarchy and other interesting topics. And that was another piece of the puzzle that led me towards Dharma. Also, I became interested in Tai Chi about the same time. And maybe all these things stem back to being 5 years old and watching the TV show Kung Fu.
Which, Kung Fu fans are too.
Yeah. And then as a kid, like, they showed repeats of it. In the afternoons, I would run home from school to watch Kung Fu. And I think these... sometimes I wonder if I'm not just living out some long-term Kung Fu fantasy. But something was implanted, or something was recognized, I think is the best way to put it. I recognized something. And I just had the luck, not only of encountering John Cage, but of encountering a really good Tai Chi master in Kansas City, where I was going to college. And I began really intensive study, going 3-4 times a week, and studying with him 2 or 3 or more hours a day. And I think that that was very interesting preparation for Zazen practice. Now, initially, after meeting John Cage, a year or so later, I encountered, also by great good fortune, good karma, I guess, the Korean Zen master Seungsan, who some of you are also familiar with, Daesun Sunim, as he's was known. And so I began practicing in the Korean tradition. And a year or so later, I went to graduate school. I lived in a Seungsan directed Zen center, and also continued my Tai Chi studies with another teacher. Both the teachers I studied with in Tai Chi were students of this fellow, Cheng Man Ching. I'll just pass this around. There are some really wonderful photographs of him in the middle of this book. And, you know, sometimes a photograph, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. And just even looking, he's radiantly smiling in all of these pictures. And now with the wonders of YouTube, you can actually watch him doing Tai Chi, which is like, I mean, there's just, it's such an instant lesson. You can just watch him doing it, and that's maybe enough sometimes. Here he is doing sword form. I'll pass this around. So this is kind of the lineage that I still practice in, although not as seriously as I once did. So I'll pass that around. Okay. And there's a poem that I included in the back of this handout of Cheng Man Ching. I think it's called Song of the 13 Postures, if I'm not mistaken. And did they make it around? Did we run out?
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, okay. There's more. I copied 15, so hopefully we have enough. Okay, perfect. So I'll just read it real quick since we're there. Dai Ji Juan. 13 postures. So the core of the Tai Chi form, when you see it done, there's really, for Cheng Man Ching, he concentrated on 13 postures. That was the core. The marvel lies in the two Ji divided into yin and yang. So we can think of the Tai Chi symbol, right? The yin yang. It transforms the myriad and returns to the one, which is, of course, harkens back to the Tao Te Ching. Return to the one. Dai Ji Juan. The two primordial powers and the four manifestations are chaos and boundless. To ride the winds, how about suspending the head top? To have some words to reveal now, I have some words to reveal now to those who can know. If the bubbling well, which by the way, so again, since we're there, we can talk about this a little bit. The bubbling well is the acupuncture point at the very bottom of your foot, kind of between the ball of your foot and the outside, just right in the middle. There's a little tender spot there that you can feel, and that's called the bubbling well, the Yongzhuan. It has no root. If the Yongzhuan, the bubbling well, has no root, and the waste has no commander, studying hard till death will be of no help. The form and function are mutually connected and nothing more. The great G can be conducted to the hand. Ward off, roll back, press, push, pull, split, elbow, shoulder. These are all motions in Tai Chi. Step forward, step back, look left, look right, central equilibrium. Not neutralizing it naturally neutralizes. Not yielding it naturally yields. So on it goes. There's an interesting thing, just as we read it, even if we don't understand the sort of meaning, there's kind of a flavor that we recognize, I think, from Zen texts as well, which is this, you know, indicator about this rich, how Zen is sort of a rich and particularly beautiful flower out of this ground coming out of Asia first. India, with its traditions of yoga and Ayurveda and all that philosophical tradition, and how that moved to China, encountered China and its rich tradition. So my focus today is sort of just, I wanted to talk a little bit about the physicality of our forms in our tradition, and how my practices in Tai Chi and in yoga, Hatha Yoga, have informed my understanding of, or continue to inform my understanding of Zazen. So I just want to touch on a few things. I think that this topic is so broad that I think volumes could probably be written about it and probably have. But in my own, I have my own personal experiences of it, and I just thought I would use this opportunity to share them with you. So, it reminds me of a story where this kind of manifests really clearly. I shared this with Taigen last, it was probably a year ago now. I went to the Next Fest. Has anybody been to the Next Fest? It's a sort of a new technology conference that's held periodically here in Chicago. I don't know if it's annual or biannual. But a friend was exhibiting there, exhibiting these robots that he builds. And his wife, who knew I meditated, was really excited because she wanted me to come and play this thing called Brain Ball. It looks like a kind of like an air hockey table, big orange table with goals on either end and a circle in the middle. And there's a little metal ball that sits in that circle. And you sit, two people sit down at either end and they strap on this brain sensor strap, encephalogram, I don't know what you would call it exactly, but it has some little diodes that go across your forehead. And that can read the electrical, you know, frequencies, vibrations emanating from your gray matter. And so I strapped this thing on. I just got in there. There's lots of bells and whistles and screaming children and collapsing robots and all kinds of things going on. So I sat down. I didn't feel exactly in the best position to really win at this brain ball thing, which the object of it is to relax. Win by relaxing, the sign said. So if you relax, indicated by your brain waves shifting from kind of stressed out alpha to theta, right? I think theta waves is kind of deep sleep. There's beta and theta. I always get them mixed up. And anyway, so you want to go as deeply into relaxation as you can, and then the ball will go towards your opponent and land in their goal, right?
So you have to relax while this is happening?
You have to relax while all this is happening, and you're trying to win, right? But it's a really wonderful game because you win by losing. There's a wonderful saying in Tai Chi called, and it was primarily a saying of this teacher, Ching Man Ching, but invest in loss. Invest in loss. I'll talk more about that in a minute. But so I sat down, I put on the strap. She was really excited because she had another friend who was there who was like a transcendental meditating guy. So she wanted to have the Zen guy versus the TM guy.
No pressure.
And I sat down and I kind of slumped in my chair. I was like, okay, saying to myself, relax, relax. I'm visualizing my chi moving. I'm going to my happy place, right? And I lost immediately. Boom, the ball just kind of rolled directly. And that happened like four times. I'm like, So my friend sits down. She's like, well, I want to try. I'm not a meditator. She's kind of a Wicca person. So she kicks my butt too. I'm like, I guess all this training I've been doing for the last 20 years is completely useless. But what I didn't do very consciously, I was a little self-conscious about like assuming a good posture. There was people watching and I just kind of wanted to sit there in the chair and be relaxed and, you know. So what I did was, I got up for a minute. I watched some other people play with this. And speaking of bad posture, I watched these kids kind of play it, and they would just kind of slump over in the chair as if this was going to be the most relaxed thing that they could do. You know, they're like sliding down in the chair. So I got back, and I set the chair back, and I got up on the edge of the chair, and I just did zazen. I didn't go to my happy place. I didn't visualize my chi. I just closed my eyes, softened my gaze, just kind of looked down softly, you know, right at the edge of the table. And I just did zazen. And this was against the guy who trounced me. But I just completely let go of it because I had already lost, so it didn't really matter. I had nothing more to lose. I was already humiliated. So someone, after just a few seconds, someone tapped me and said, "Titus, you won." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So we did that a few times, and it was the same against the guy who had, you know, just trounced me. And then my friend tried, and then, you know, I beat her, and then other people. But all I did was just sit there and do zazen. And the ball just kept rolling into other people's goals. This went on for a while until this pneumatically enhanced woman in a miniskirt, which I thought was going to be a real challenge. But luckily I didn't look at her. I just looked at the board. But she was the date, the arm candy of some, like, magnet of industry who was there. And that was the most embarrassing. So I knew that I could really... She was losing so badly. I mean, the ball was just practically, like, shooting towards her. So I tried to lose. I thought I'd be chivalrous and I would try to lose. And I thought about, like, you know, George Bush, and I thought about Iraqi children, you know, dead Iraqi children, and horrible things. And I did manage to slow the inevitable. The ball did sort of, and I stopped, like, I just stared at the ball. I was like, "Come towards me." You know, I'm like gritting my teeth. But still, the ball sort of inevitably went the other direction. And at that point, I just gave up. But that was so instructive to me, that the power of this form that we assume, it's not errant. It's not haphazard. It's scientific. Mm-hmm. There's something about it. And it also is informed by this understanding that we can get a little bit from yoga and from Tai Chi. So a few of those things I just wanted to bring up. And for many of you, this may be very familiar. And some Zen teachers have spoken about some of these things specifically. I wanted to talk about the macrocosmic orbit in the body. You know, with Zen coming out of this this wealth of sort of Chinese body awareness and knowledge. Of course, in Chinese medicine and in yoga too, there's an understanding about the body having energy pathways or meridians running through it, right? This is what Chinese medicine is based on. The free flow of energy moving through the body resulting in health. If energy is moving freely, then we're healthy. If energy becomes stagnant, blocked, errant in some way, disease is the manifestation of that. So in this fundamentally sane posture that we assume in Zazen, well, Dogen was very clear about this. There's a passage that I read the other night in this History of Zen Buddhism. And there's quite a lengthy couple of chapters on Dogen in here. So the author Heinrich Dumoulin writes, "In Dogen's directives concerning the physical bearing and psychological processes of Zen, one finds deep insights into the unity of body and mind in the human being. In a discourse from the Zui Monkey, he discusses whether, quote, the way is attained through the mind or through the body. The Buddhism of the sutras solves the problem by pointing to the identity of body and mind. Dogen was not happy with this explanation, since it fails to bring out clearly the role that the body has to play. He was convinced that the way of the Buddha cannot be followed only with the mind, not even if one were to ponder the Buddha Dharma for 10,000 kalpas or through thousands of rebirths." So there, and then he quotes Dogen here. "Therefore, if you cast aside completely the thoughts and concepts of the mind and concentrate on Zazen alone, Shikantaza, you attain to an intimacy with the way, The attainment of the way is truly accomplished with the body. For this reason, I urge you to concentrate on Zazen. And then he goes on, by no means does Dogen wish to deny the unity of body and mind, only to insist that a theoretical knowledge of this unity is not enough. One must realize it in Zazen. So I think this was very somewhat subconsciously or unconsciously, but it was a real attraction to me for Zazen. And even as I shifted from the Korean tradition and encountered Soto Zen, there's something about the forms, the postures, the rituals that seem to transmit this understanding or this Buddha mind directly. And it's not something... That's why we're all here. I mean, this is the thing that attracts all of us to it. So, back to... Let's talk about our Zazen posture a little bit. I just wanted to, again, bring some of these little bits of knowledge from Tai Chi and Qigong. Qigong, of course, Qigong sort of means energy work. Tai Chi is a form of Qigong, a martial form. So one of the fundamental energetic understandings in Qigong and Tai Chi is the macrocosmic orbit. So it's an energy circuit. Who's heard of it? Has anybody here heard of? Yeah. So it's an energy circuit that runs through the core of the body. So as you all are aware, we try to relax our abdomens and our breathing and allow the organs to relax and sink. So if we think of the center, the physiological center and the energetic center of the body in Chinese medicine is thought to be just a little bit below the navel, kind of inside a couple of inches. So if we start there with this orbit, we circle down sort of through the genital organs, through the perineum, through the tip of the coccyx, up through the sacrum, and then up through the spine. So we can run up through the spine into the skull, and the circuit actually runs along the inside of the skull through the third eye. And the reason is, as instructed by Dogen and as always taught in Zazen, we touch our tongue to the roof of our mouth. Sometimes it's usually just said right behind the teeth, but this can also go further back in the mouth. It completes the circuit. That's like your circuit breaker in a way. And then the energy continues on its pathway. But just a word about the tongue, and I found it really important. When I was studying Qigong and Tai Chi when I was younger, I was told that you could move the tongue a little bit further back into the soft palate. And so that's where I sort of trained myself to place my tongue. And in time, and it's only gotten stronger over time, but I don't know if anybody ever licked a battery when you were a kid. You get this weird electrical charge. Did anybody ever do that? So, Mara still does it just for kids. That's what it feels like every time I touch my tongue through the roof of my mouth. I kind of find myself doing it a lot unconsciously. I just, sitting on the train, walking down the street, especially if something kind of, there's a loud noise or something shocks me or I'm feeling kind of stressed out. And it feels like licking a battery, which I can only assume is chi flow. I don't know what else it would be. So the chi flows down through the tongue, sort of through behind the esophagus, down behind the sternum, and then back to the center. So you can, this is something that different Zen masters have talked about very explicitly. Jiyu Kennett Roshi, the English woman who went to Japan and opened a monastery in, in California and passed away a few years ago, she explicitly instructed her students to just kind of spend a few breaths at the beginning of their zazen, visualizing that circuit. But I think very importantly, she said then just drop it. Certain Qigong teachers say that that's the thing that you do. You just visualize that all the way through your meditation. You don't worry about anything else, and you start to get a very good feeling from it, and then you know you're doing it right. That's not our Zen way, I don't think. I think it's maybe, you know, it could possibly be a helpful way to check in with your body and kind of orient your body at the beginning of Zazen. But I think then it's important to probably just put it down. And maybe occasionally you could check in with that and just see, well, how does it feel? You know, how does it feel? That circuit typically runs up the spine, is said to run up the spine through the skull down the front. So you've got a yin and yang balance going on too. Which is something that we explore in our bowing practice. When we bow, you're actually exposing that yang hardness that's often very armored in our lives, right? It's like our shell, and we find a lot of that tension as we sit in zazen. In our bowing practice, it's a wonderful opportunity to relax that. So, of course, in yoga, that's a posture. You know, all of these things are postures that we can explore. But in our bowing practice, you know, I know for myself, I find it really helpful to be aware of that, and maybe even say a mantra as you go down that's coordinated. Om Mani Padme Hum works really well. Standing Om Mani as the knees hit, Padme Hum as the hands turn. Or Gate Gate Para Gate Para Samgate Bodhisvaha, that can work with a bow. Namo Amida Buddha, that also works quite neatly with the different aspects. You can find each aspect of the bow. There's an independent series of moments there and postures that are linked together. Very much like in Tai Chi, there are these discrete postures. Which also brings me to this wonderful talk I found from Suzuki Roshi. So we'll tie it directly back into our lecture, or into our tradition. You should sit zazen with your whole body, your spine, mouth, toes, mudra. Check on your posture during zazen. Each part of your body should practice zazen independently or separately. Your toes should practice zazen independently, your mudra, your spine, your mouth. You should feel each part of your body doing zazen separately. I think that's a really wonderful thing. So, of course, in zazen, our practice is very still, but we find the motion in that stillness of the circuit, the macrocosmic orbit. Also, there are other orbits. In our arms, we have another one. In our hands, there's another one. In our legs, there's another one. This is very explicit in Qigong. So, in Qigong, there's horse posture. This is a very common posture. In fact, why don't we all stand up and go ahead and try this? Because I want to introduce this to you too, because I injured my knee recently, and I talked to my best friend who's an acupuncturist, and I said, what can I do about this knee besides going and getting lots of acupuncture that I can't afford? And she said, do horse stance. And it worked like a charm. My knee was really very painful for a long time, and it was difficult for me in zazen. And I started doing horse posture. So you want to have your feet a little wider than your shoulders. And it can be a little bit narrower if you're more upright, or you can, you just feel it. How does it feel? So that forms a circuit. Then you've got the circuit of your macrocosmic orbit. Then you've got your hands, which are kind of at your heart level. And imagine that you're kind of sitting on a big beach ball, and you're holding a big beach ball. in your arms, and you've got a big beach ball between your knees. That's a way to kind of think about it. So we don't have our knees kind of collapsed in, but just imagine there's like a ball in there. And like our hands, imagine that there's a ball in there. And our seat, imagine that we're... So, again, we've got circuits. This is so applicable to Zazen, right? This is almost directly correlative to our Zazen practice. And I really recommend this. We all have knee problems, right, when we sit Zazen. When you have a break in Sesshin, try this, you know. You'll find it's really, really helpful, and it's a really nice way to activate the legs. One thing you want to check when you're in this, check your butt muscles, that your butt muscles are relaxed. They shouldn't be flexed, right? And then suddenly you do that. Everybody go ahead and feel your butt. You can. If you find that they're tense, you'll relax it, and suddenly your legs go, oh, because all the energy, all that goes right into the legs, which is as it should be. So you can think about your bubbling well, too, when we're in this posture. That's where the chi comes up. So when you go back and look at that Ching Man Ching, he's talking about the bubbling well. The energy manifests through the bubbling well. It's controlled in the waist, and then it flows out through the hands. That's, you know, how they do those amazing things. Tai Chi guys throw people, you know, 100 feet with just a flick of their wrists, because it's everything's connected into it. Okay, so we get back down.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, please.
So, does your center of gravity and your weight go over your bubbling well then, or does it go more towards over your heel?
How does it feel?
Either way.
It should be, your feet, imagine that they're like this. Uh-huh. That the ball of your foot and the side of your foot and your heel, and you're just perfectly balanced. Okay. Right on those things. Right on that tripod. That's how my teacher used to talk about it. So, but sometimes you want to roll forward a little bit, because that's how it feels. And sometimes you need to sit back a little bit. But generally, you want to be balanced over that. And so that same sense of balance, you know, in Tai Chi, how are we doing for time? A little bit more. Okay. So in Tai Chi, these are instructions, and this is what I always teach when I teach Zazen. I kind of use some of the Tai Chi instructions. So suspended head top. It's not suspended up here. It's not suspended back here.
Right.
It's suspended right here. Actually, I'm going to have a stand up. I'm sorry to do this to you, especially those in robes. I wanted to talk about Kinhin. I don't want to get out of this without... This is one of my main inspirations for doing this. So let's talk about Kinhin for a minute, because Kinhin is a wonderful Tai Chi practice. So I notice oftentimes with people doing Kinhin, there's not that sense of translation from the sitting practice to the physical practice. So when standing too, the Soto instruction for standing, it's one of the forms that I appreciate, but it's sort of like you've got a fist between your heels, and then your toes just pointed slightly out. There's kind of an intelligence to that too. So we're not standing like this. We're not standing like this. There's kind of an intelligence about this form of just standing. With our arms, the forearms are parallel to the ground. There's kind of an intelligence that fits with Tai Chi too. It's like you're holding eggs under your armpits. So our arms aren't collapsed. And our hands aren't up here around our chest, and they're not down here around our gut either. Some schools do that, but our school does this. So there's kind of an intelligence about it that I really, really appreciate. And so when we breathe, it's very much like Tai Chi. You can imagine that you're bubbling well, and you breathe in and you shift your weight. Tai Chi is all about shifting weight, 100% yin to yang, yin to yang. So you can feel every bit of that in this slow Kinhin walking. So you breathe in, and then as you exhale, you step out. And then you breathe into that bubbling well as you move forward. It's just like Tai Chi. It's fabulous. And then you exhale and step. You're separating yin and yang. That's what we talk about in Tai Chi. And then you breathe in. And then you breathe out. It's just another way to figure out how it feels. Also, another part of the form that I just wanted to bring up is when you get to the end of the row, sometimes, I think a lot of us, we sort of do this rounding curve thing. But it's sort of like when you have in Tai Chi or in a karate kata, you know, like a form, you go to the end of the line and then you step and return. And you start fresh. There's a cleanness and a physical rightness about that, and intelligence. Again, it's just something that we've been handed down by the teachers in our lineage. It's a kind of intelligence that it's just one more manifestation of it that we get. All right. So, am I done?
That's very good.
So are there any questions, I guess?
I wanted to make some comments before
yes,
discussion, just that I wanted to first second everything that Titus said about the forms from my own experience, but particularly I wanted to say a little bit about what you call the macrocosmic orbit, mm-hmm. which I learned when I took a Taoism class from Tom Cleary, and I don't talk about it often, but I have talked about it sometimes with individual students, and I think a few times maybe in sessions. I don't know if anybody remembers me talking about it, but so I wouldn't, you know, I think it's okay if you just want to do that. I think it is helpful to do it in the beginning of a period. The thing that I wanted to add to what you said about it is and he called it the water wheel, mm-hmm. But it's the same thing you were talking about. But he added the breath to it, so mm-hmm. slowly inhaling up the back, as you described it, and then to about here, and then exhaling mm-hmm. down. I didn't know the thing about the tongue, so thank you for that. Mm-hmm. But exhaling down the front. It's something you can do. There are... You know, we talk in Dogen Zen about just sitting as just being present with whatever arises, but these, I appreciate you bringing up these forms and the energetic meditation technology that comes in large part from Taoism, it comes from other forms of Buddhist meditation. Anything that helps in settling and being present, including these techniques, I think are very good, so feel free to use that. Different techniques at different times may be more or less helpful for different people. So that's I just wanted to add that to what you said.
Yes, thank you. That's very true, and that's exactly how I practice it too, and was taught it by various Taoist teachers and Tai Chi teachers that I've studied with too. But I think it's important to always remember. On this note, in the other thing that I didn't get a chance to mention so much, but one of Taigen's own translations here, the acupuncture needle of Zazen by Hongzhi, which was a very transformative book for me and how I ended up encountering Taigen as I was looking for a translation of it, his translation of it. And it doesn't even speak directly about acupuncture, but it's that relationship again. And what's important is, I think, this understanding of our Zazen being this this abode of bliss, or this gateway of bliss and repose that Taigen often speaks about. So I think that that's our orientation. And if these other things can help inform that practice, if they're useful in that effort, then I think, you know, we can incorporate them. And if they're not so much, if they become a distraction or an obsession, then we have to sort of back off them. And I think a lot of Taoist meditation becomes very, very obsessive about effects from mm-hmm. some of these things. And I just, in my own, it's just never been that interesting to me. I've had very clear experiences of feeling this kind of energetic stuff happen, maybe a couple of times. Most of the time, it's not so clear. That sometimes it's just a way to engage the body and allow that feeling of bliss and repose, because Dogen speaks very explicitly that we should be very relaxed. This should be a relaxed and enjoyable practice. Taigen, I really appreciate his emphasis. I've never encountered a teacher who emphasizes so clearly that we need to enjoy our zazen. It should be really enjoyable and interesting and pleasurable experience to engage in this way. And I think that some of these other practices can just help become gateways into this gateway of zazen. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Titus. Questions or comments or responses or anything from about this material that Titus has offered us tonight?
Could you sort of unpack a little bit this word you used a couple of times when you talked about the intelligence of the forms? What do you mean by intelligence there?
The thought that arises is sort of like what I was reading from the text about Dogen and the unity of body and mind, and how the knowledge or the gnosis that comes through our Zen practice is not intellectual, and yet it's not wholly physical, right? This isn't physical exercise, and it's not philosophical exercise, but it's not those things too. And I think that's been a really primary attraction for me personally, with Zen practice as a whole and with Dogen Zen practice in particular, is those things seem to be really wonderfully manifested. We see this in Japanese culture in many respects and in Chinese culture, but you know, each culture has its own, and I've practiced in these different traditions, but there's something about these Soto forms that just seem, I would just call it an intelligence that's been developed, and that I think we can surrender to, like we surrender to this posture. I think we can kind of surrender ourselves, our ego, to it. And I think we can do that. That's what we do with chanting together, and that's what we do with kinhin, and it's what we do with the bowing. Very explicitly with bowing, you know, that's a very surrendering kind of thing. So there's just an intelligence there. The way that we do these things with our bodies, they transmit something, I think, just intrinsically without explanation. Does that make sense?
Other comments?
Yeah. This is maybe totally related, but when you were talking about kinhin, I think about, I've been thinking about kinhin as, in particular, I feel like I have a relationship with the floor, and this floor in this mm-hmm. zendo is particularly difficult to have a peaceful relationship with, and so I find myself trying to find ways of, you know, kind of walking so that the floor complains as little as possible. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, I found a way to I keep trying to find a way to sort of be as fluid as possible. And so I, you know, like, to me that feels, you know, very mindful, and like, I hope I'm getting the point, but I do find myself wondering, you know, am I missing the point by not, you know, like, it is time with breathing and in sync with breathing, but it's not, you know, like, pick one foot up, put it down. It's more like I try to be continuous, and so I guess I've wondered if that's okay to do, or...
Well, a couple of thoughts that come to mind that, and you know, I've been thinking about giving this talk for a couple of weeks, so I have all these thoughts rattling in my brain, but I saw a wonderful interview on the Daily Show, I think it was, or the Colbert Report, one of the one of those two favorite shows, with this guy who just wrote about the Tarahumara Indians in Mexico, who are great runners. They had like some 90-year-old man in the Tarahumara just ran for 100 miles without stopping and with no problem. So how do they learn how to do this? They sometimes run 400-mile races within their tribe. So how do they do it? And he studied how they did it. Well, one of the most important things that they do, because they run in these grass sandals, One of the things he figured out as a runner who had injured his foot, he learned from them that they run on the balls of their feet. Mm-hmm. So they roll back onto their heel. We as a people, it's very interesting. We can sit in here and you can learn a lot about someone, how they walk through the room or something. You know, you don't have to see them. But, and just in the world, you know, we like pound with our heels. We pound and flop. But you can try in Kinhin to be that thing, because that's a Tai Chi thing too, to kind of slide the foot, glide it, maybe just barely above the ground, hitting the ball of the foot first and rolling back on the heel. That's, yeah, please.
Just to add to that, for people who don't know, by the way, Kinhin means walking meditation, which we do Thursday nights or any time we do more than one period. But yeah, the thing about step... one of the things that I hope we get to do next year during our sessions is have oryoki food meals with servers. And we have tea servers now, but one of the forms, the Soto, intelligent Soto forms, is going around and serving, and you learn not to clomp on your heels, but it's a kind of gliding. And to add to two things to that, in one of the things that Japanese monks who've trained in Japanese monasteries have this way of walking that is kind of like that gliding, walking on the balls of the feet more. I think it comes from no theater, actually. If you see no theater, there's a kind of way of walking. Going back to what you were saying, Nancy, I would say that part of walking meditation is kind of cooperating with the floor. If it squeaks, that's okay. Just, you know, that you may not know if the floor is actually going to be there, but somehow you're, you know, doing it together with the floor. And then the last thing, when you said about these runners in Mexico using straw sandals, reminded me of Takuhatsu, the begging rounds I did in Japan, where you have these straw sandals where your toes are kind of hanging over the tip of the sandal, and it takes a while to learn how to walk in these things. You strap them around with straw around your ankles up to here, and at first they're really uncomfortable, and if you don't know how to walk on them, your feet will actually bleed, and we would tape our feet up a little bit before we'd go out sometimes, but they become very comfortable, and I think it has to do with that. So part of walking meditation is just to notice our walking. It's not that you have to be doing it the quote-unquote correct way, but just, you know, to feel, you know, as Titus was indicating, that it's a kind of extension of this physical posture. So it's another Zazen posture. Anyway, maybe I should give a whole Dharma talk on Kinhin sometime, but...
It's a lifelong study.
We don't have enough opportunities to do it. We do it when we do monthly sittings or Thursday evening. So maybe we should incorporate more walking meditation in our schedule. But we're almost at time. We have tea and cookies waiting for us after this, and we can continue the discussion more informally. But if anyone has some other comment you want to add, Hogetsu-san, did you have something?
I just kept thinking of this bubblegum rock song. Yummy, 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 I've got love in my tummy. You know, because that's what it feels like for me in Zazen. That's the energetic. It's not this, you know, I'm getting some energy strength in my aura. It's this softness and...
Yeah.
And that's the same with Kinhin. Yeah. That contact with this beautiful golden floor.
Yeah.
But it's different for everyone.
Thank you. It is different for everyone, and there's a softness as well as a strength to it. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's another aspect of it that I think is a wonderful indicator, because also in Taoist yoga, you know, there's energy centers. There's the sort of mental center, there's the emotional center, and there's the physical center. And in our practice, there's kind of a lowering of the activity in those upper centers and kind of bringing them down, so that the emotional center, actually the love, does go into your tummy. Mm-hmm. And it gives it a kind of a, I don't know what you'd call it, but a groundedness, a spaciousness. So it's not fluttering in your heart, but it's warm and nurtured and kind of seated in this wider space. I don't know. It's a way to think about it. Again, something else to just explore in your sitting. But I think that feeling of love and compassion, spaciousness, affection is fundamental to the rest of it.
Thank you very much. No, thank you, everyone.